Hello and welcome to the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. How are we doing, Corey?
Fantastic. Fantastic. It's almost like the Pacers beat the Celtics last night. I don't know. It's kind of how I feel.
Yeah, you can tell Corey's happy right now. Victor Oladipo with that game-winning three and game-saving deflection on both ends of the floor. Impressive win for the Pacers. Today, we're going to talk Lakers, Cavs, best team in the East, second-best team in the West, and, you know, probably throwing some more things in there. But as always, check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. But, Corey, let's start with the Lakers drama. Obviously, 4-5, anytime you bring LeBron in, you know you're going to have more drama. Earlier this week, there was reports that Magic Johnson had a meeting with Luke Walton, and Magic kind of critiqued Walton on his coaching style, some of the schemes he's putting out there, the rotations, and quote-unquote, there isn't a system. And, you know, this kind of comes a little bit shocking because I think it was in sometime this summer, Magic was like, you know, we're not going to be concerned about a slow start, especially early in October and November, but looks like things are already changing in Lakers land. What are your thoughts on the meeting and all that?
I mean, it comes with the territory when you get LeBron James. I don't think they're concerned about winning early. I still don't think they are. But the fact of the matter is they've been in close games and games that they very well could have won. And maybe if there was a few other adjustments by Luke Walton, maybe they win those games. I know Lakers Nation on Twitter, they've been critical of some of his offensive sets that he draws up. They seem kind of basic. They're not very creative. And Magic, you know, obviously when you have LeBron James and you've been in these close games, you know, they matter in the West. Every game matters. And you got to win the must-win games. And then you got to steal some of the games that they stole last night against Portland. That was a good win, even though the Blazers made it tough at the end. So I think – and also, let me say this. A slow start is okay. But this Lakers season, I truly believe, is a failure to them if they don't make the playoffs. Like that – they can't miss the playoffs for them. It's – they're not expecting to win a title, but they're expecting to be a playoff team and then to build off that yearly. You know, playoffs this year, maybe a second round next year, and then hopefully competing for a title the year after that. I feel like that's the setup they have. And the fact of the matter is they had this slow start. And, you know, Luke Walton was privileged to have that Golden State Warriors team he coached a couple of years ago when Steve Kerr was out. So his record looks really good. And we're finally getting to see with a player like LeBron what kind of coach he is.
Yeah, and I honestly, I'll take Luke Walton's side a little bit in this because I think it is super early in the season. You're adding LeBron. This is a person that we've known. I don't want to say it's hard to coach, but he is going to have his own impact on the game. You have a ton of young players, a ton of new pieces in there. I think the slow start was expected from most people, and I think a scheme fit, you know, trying to adjust. I think the Lakers have played the second most lineups in the NBA so far, so obviously there isn't really a feel for chemistry, and I think Luke Walton responded to Magic saying he needed some big help, which we'll talk about in a little bit, picking up Tyson Chandler. Now, there's also another quote in some of the reports that the Lakers veterans were not happy. Even though they weren't able to confirm if LeBron was part of that. Do you think LeBron had some push to Magic to kind of say something to Luke Walton, or this is all Magic on his own and kind of reacting to maybe like a Rondo or some of the other vets?
I'm sure it was partly LeBron because I feel like that this all came after that the patience comment LeBron had, where he said that when my patience runs out, you don't want to be around. So I think that quote alone probably – maybe LeBron didn't say anything directly, but I feel like that was the quote that Magic was like, all right, I need to sit down with my head coach and just go over some things because we don't want to have an unhappy LeBron James on this roster. And I'm sure Rondo probably did say something.
Yeah, hey, I feel like Rondo is probably a guy that definitely said something. LeBron, like you said, he might have said something. Publicly, it's looked like he supported Luke. There was like some video clip that got posted last night that he was kind of arguing with Luke on the sideline, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a bad thing. Now, looking at it from, you know, where the Lakers are at now, obviously last six games, 4-2. Do you think they're starting to kind of get in the right direction?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think, and also something that I think gets kind of overlooked is they did miss, you know, Brandon Ingram was suspended for four games. Rondo missed a couple games. You know, those are two key guys to this Lakers team. And Lonzo those guys
Ball
missed a few
from injury.
Right, right. And, you know, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, I mean, he's been dreadful to start this year. So they had they've had some obstacles early, which doesn't help. But yeah, I think they're starting to figure it out slightly. The defense is what they need help on. The offense is, I think they're a top 10 offensive rating team. So the offense isn't an issue. It's just the defense. And Brandon Ingram, again, last night, another strong performance by him, and he's going to be crucial to any success this team has.
Yeah, they need him on both ends of the floor too, because obviously there is a lot of potential. Now, talking about, you know, the other rumor that came out, the report, Tyson Chandler was bought out by the Suns, and it looks like he's going to sign with the Lakers. Obviously, 18-year veteran, you know, is known for his rebounding and defensive play. You know, he's like 36 right now. What are you expecting to bring to this Laker team?
I'm expecting him to play 15 to 20 minutes a game, and he's really going to be the defensive anchor for the second unit. I think the presence of him in the locker room is going to be huge. Obviously, he won a title with Dallas. And the Knicks, when he was with the Knicks, everyone spoke highly of him. I haven't heard anything bad about his time with Phoenix. He's a guy who he's a good guy. He's the kind of veteran presence I feel like is the complete opposite of LeBron and Rondo. Like, he's more of the good cop in a scenario where I feel like LeBron and Rondo may be like the bad cop. So I love the signing of Chandler. They've obviously needed it. And I know some people were asking maybe he'll start over JaVale McGee. And there is no damn way you can bring McGee off the bench with how he's played to start this year. He's been ridiculous, maybe even a most improved player of the year candidate.
Yeah, McGee definitely is impressed. Obviously, we saw some flashes with Golden State, and he's a lot younger. He can deal with the minutes and the baggage. I think, like you mentioned with Tyson, like, he's not going to play big minutes. I would say probably 12 to 16 for something for him. Like I said, he's 36. You know, last 2 years, Phoenix, I think, has shut him down. So he's had the opportunity to get a little bit more rest. But I think in the rebounding department, he'll really help. And like you said, defensively with that second unit, it should really help them out, and just having a nice steadying force and just another veteran to have around. I think the buyout market's going to be somewhere we see the Lakers attack throughout the season.
No doubt.
Moving on to Kevin Love, unless you have anything you want to throw in about the Lakers.
This is a team I think will be making a deal at some point this year. I think there will be a roster change up at some point in time. It just has that feeling. And I don't know who they can move or who they'll want to move, but it just feels like a team that if they want to actually compete for a playoff spot, they're probably going to have to add one more guy.
Yeah, and it also probably will matter who becomes available, because they do have assets, a lot of tradable contracts. Definitely something to keep an eye on all season long. Moving on to LeBron's former team, the Cavaliers. It was reported, you know, Kevin Love had successful surgery this week on his left foot / toe. Our guy Matt Nugent wrote a great piece from the medical perspective on OTGBasketball.com. Check that out. You know, this is an injury that could have caused more issues down the road. You know, with this type of injury, it can cause you to kind of have an imbalance and maybe tear your ACL or some other leg injury. So it was important to kind of get that taken care of. And he's out 6 weeks. What are your thoughts on the Love injury and the surgery?
I mean, this is the worst case scenario that we predicted or we talked about before the season started. And I know that when this contract was initially signed, I was heavily against it. And I said, this is going to be one of the worst contracts in the league going forward. Maybe not quickly, but at some point in time, and it hasn't looked good. Obviously, he was really inefficient to start off the year, and now he has the surgery. He's out for 6 weeks, and the 6 weeks is probably going to be longer, because the 6 weeks, I think, is just them.
Yeah, it was going to be reevaluated. At least 6 weeks. Yeah, at least
right.
6 weeks.
So we're probably looking at 6 to 10 weeks, or 8 to 10 weeks, more than likely. And, you know, this Cavs team obviously has been dreadful. They already fired Ty Lue. Obviously, I hope Kevin Love comes back to this and plays like the all-star Kevin Love we know that he can be. But it's concerning, especially with how much money he's being paid. It's not a great start to this extension.
Yeah, and it also really hurts their opportunity to trade him this season, because there was some talk that they signed the extension not only to try to compete now, but if things didn't work out, they could kind of trade him, which we thought was going to be a hard contract to trade. I know some people think might not be quite as hard, but right now, you know, he comes back. Maybe he's good for January. And now he has to kind of work his way up before that trade deadline to kind of make a move. Now it looks like they won't even be able to move him really until the offseason if he doesn't come back, you know, 100% and putting up some nice numbers. Like you mentioned, he wasn't very efficient when he was in there too. This whole Cavs team right now seems like a wreck. It's, you know, like you mentioned, the Lue firing, now Love hurt, and just guys aren't performing well. You know, losing a player like LeBron really hurts.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw the comment from earlier today that apparently the Cavs brass told Kyle Korver that if LeBron James didn't come back, they would move him or buy him out. And since the season started, they've gone against that. They've told him they're going to keep him to try and win. Which is also a shady scenario. There you got that miscommunication. Apparently, Kevin Love was told the same thing. You know, we're going to try and compete, but if not, then, you know, we'll try and get you out of here. And obviously, that's probably not going to happen, as we just mentioned.
Yeah, and even more detail on the Korver thing, I think it was released via The Athletic. they told Korver that they would try to move him in the offseason so he could kind of get his family resituated before the season started. And then they're like, nah, you know, we're going to try to compete this season. We want to keep you around, which is super strange considering they didn't even play Korver big minutes and he was out of the rotation for a couple games. So that whole situation, I'd expect him to be moved sooner than later. And Kevin Love, like we said, it's going to be harder to move him now with the injury and what's going to happen. I mean, this whole Cavs team really needs to go through fire sale, limited assets. They're better off tanking because if their pick is top 10 protected.
Yeah, and not to mention J.R. Smith also pretty much publicly said that he wants to be traded. Obviously, the question that was asked was pretty bad because it kind of set him up to possibly have like a fine, but I don't think he's getting fined.
Like a misleading kind of type of question. What do you like if you're ranking the Cavs players on who like has the most value to trade right now? Let's just assume Kevin Love's, you know, off the list because he's hurt right now. Ranking them down, who do you think are like the most, you know, the top three guys to be traded?
The top three guys, in my opinion, would be, funny enough, Rodney Hood, then probably Kyle Korver, and then George Hill. I think those three probably have the highest, and then Larry Nance Jr. probably right outside of it because he's young.
Yeah, especially going to like a contender. Obviously, the young guys they do have, they'll probably try to keep and not move them. But I would agree with that. I think Korver would be number one on the list because you already know what you're getting. So many teams can use spacing. We've already brought out teams like Philly, LA, OKC as a possible destination. You think the Cavs will end up being the worst team in the NBA this season?
I mean, they gave up, what, like 60 points last night to the Charlotte Hornets bench. I mean, the Hornets have played really well this season, but, I mean, this Cavs team just looks dreadful. Yeah, I think this is the worst team in the league by far.
Yeah, especially if they move some of the other veterans around, then they're going to probably bring in some either, you know, young guys that need to develop or possibly some G League guys. It does not look good for Cleveland, and obviously every time you lose a superstar like LeBron, it's really hard to bounce back. But moving on from there, going to more of a positive note, talking Eastern Conference, you know, obviously so far in the season, what's been the best Eastern Conference team in your eyes?
This is a really tough question, like extremely, extremely tough, because I feel like every team, like the Celtics beat the Raptors, the Celtics beat the Bucks, but the Bucks beat the Raptors. Like all these teams have played and they've kind of beaten each other, but then lost to each other at the same time. I don't think the Celtics are the best. I think they will be when the season comes to a close, but I just don't think they're there yet. You know, Hayward's still coming back. He looks like he shouldn't be playing as many minutes as he's playing. Kyrie Irving is just starting to get going. You know, Tatum has been really streaky. Then the Raptors have been, oh man.
The Raptors only lost came against Milwaukee when Kawhi sat.
Right. Exactly. I think it's got to be the Raptors early. And then if I had to, like, just rank the top three teams, I think it'd be Raptors, Bucks, Celtics. Even though the Bucks lost to the Celtics, I just really like how that team looks in their new system, and they're just getting the system going. But I think the Raptors, especially when Kawhi plays, they're just a different team. And defensively, I haven't seen a team that tough in a long time.
Yeah, for me, it's definitely the Raptors. It wasn't quite as hard. I mean, I like what the Bucks are doing, but I think the Raptors just have more depth and they have the ability to have Kawhi and Kyle Lowry where, you know, they have Antetokounmpo, Middleton stepped up, but it's still not the same. Then you look at the Raptors, third in offensive rating, eighth in defensive rating, and like you mentioned, a ton of defensive weapons. They just have a lot of guys that can play great defense on that team. And I think we both agree that Kawhi's not 100% yet. He's probably still got another level to hit, and that's kind of scary.
Yeah, if I had to guess what his, you know, his percentage of being back, he's probably at like 85%, I'd say.
I'd agree.
And, you know, and I feel like there's just, you know, if he gets just a little bit, you know, if he's, oh man, it's scary how good this team can be once he hits 100%. And again, you know, it's not like they have a ton of chemistry yet. They still have a new head coach as well, which I feel like goes under the radar. And Nick Nurse has done a tremendous job so far in his first season with the Raptors. I think this is a team that's going to be dangerous.
Yeah, and you shout out to Nick Nurse, like you said, you know, being assistant last year, then taking over this year. He's done a really good job kind of switching things up and not really being scared to try out new things. I know a lot of people were surprised Valanciunas came off the bench. They went with, like, the smaller lineup to start. But they just have so many different tools that I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of adapt as the season goes on. And that's a team they could even just add another veteran possibly if they wanted to the unit, and they could take another step forward.
Yeah, and Siakam, he's been tremendous. I didn't expect this kind of jump from him with the increase in minutes, but he's been really good.
My breakout player right there for Siakam. But a ton of guys on that team have really just impressed. And, I mean, the Bucks, though, to touch on them a little bit, like you said, Coach Bud's system has really helped them, opening things for Giannis. And Giannis just looks more physical, more, intimidating. You know, you see him get in that post a little bit, even in, like, the mid-post. He gets a regular wing on him. He's just backing him down. The guy's in front of him, he's still dunking on him. It's just been really crazy. And like you said, Boston will probably be at least one or two by the end of the year when they start to get things in sync. You know, we saw Kyrie kind of heat up a little bit against the Pacers, but they're not 100% yet. Same thing with Gordon Hayward. When they hit that level, you know, they're going to be a team to really be scared of.
Yeah, especially if Marcus Morris keeps playing how he's playing off the bench. That team really is 9 players, almost 10 players deep.
Yeah. I mean, Brad Stevens' hardest job is probably, settling that rotation when everyone starts to hit full stride. Any other teams in the East that you think deserve some love? You know, they might not be the best team, but they've really impressed so far.
You want me to do it? You want me to say it? The Indiana Pacers.
Real up.
7-3. Just keep sleeping, everybody. I mean, they're not flashy. They are one of the teams in the league that still relies heavily on mid-range shots, but they shoot just efficient threes. I think they're in the top 5 for three-point percentage, even though they only shoot, I think, like between 12 and 16 a game. They just play tough. They play team basketball. They know who they are, which is, you know, something that a lot of teams are still trying to figure out early in the season. And I don't think they're a team that will make the Eastern Conference Finals, but they're going to be a team that's going to, whoever they play in the playoffs, is going to be a long, extended series. And they're just really tough. And I think they're better than the Sixers right now, even though Joel Embiid has been on an absolute tear the last week or so. I think he had like 40 points or 60 points between two games. You know, one game only had 9 shots or whatever. I mean, he's been absolutely ridiculous. But the cast around him in Philly is just so questionable to me. I just don't think they got good enough to really compete. But the Pacers, they're just really scrappy. And, you know, they had a tough win last night on a back-to-back against the Celtics after having to come back from 13 down against the Bulls the night before. You know, those back-to-backs suck. And normally when you're playing one of the teams like the Celtics, you don't expect to win. And they just really hung with them. And the Celtics were in Indiana the night before resting up. So I really like where they are to start the year.
Yeah, no, definitely team basketball has been, you know, the mantra for the Pacers the last two seasons. And, you know, we talked about this a little bit off, you know, off the pod, and that's Sabonis and Tyreke Evans coming off the bench, you know, two guys that could start on majority of teams, especially in the league and almost the entire Eastern Conference. So having two of those guys like that, having a nice team of veterans and solid players, and obviously Victor Oladipo just having that splash and that spunk really changes this team.
Yeah, and I have to say, Miles Turner, the last 7 quarters of freaking monster. Incredible. The first quarter against the Chicago Bulls, he just looked so out of sorts. He had 3 or 4 turnovers. And I guess Oladipo and everybody accompanying told him, you know, just like slow it down and play your game. In the last 7 quarters, he's been the second best player on this Pacers team. He had 5 blocks against the Bulls. One was a game ceiling block. And then again, last night, he played some big minutes against the Celtics. So you like to see that because the early discussions between Pacers is, you know, is it Sabonis or Miles Turner? That's the future. And right now, Miles Turner is playing himself back into the future.
Yeah, and I think everyone would probably agree for the Pacers to take another step this year, it would be Miles Turner taking that step and really leading this team as the second best player. Moving to the Western Conference, I know we'll both agree on number one is the Golden State Warriors. So we'll talk about who's been the second best team in the West.
Unfortunately, the Pelicans did not maintain their extremely hot start. Obviously, Anthony Davis was kind of banged up, so now they're kind of falling back to earth. What are they, 4-5 now? Yeah, 5 straight losses since that 4-0 start. But it's got to be Denver, right? It's got to be the team that's 8-1. They won 4 straight. Last night, they had another good win in which Jokic only had 9 points, 10 rebounds, 16 assists. Like, that's a center, not a point guard. Those are Rondo numbers from a center.
Don't tell him that.
And it was against the Utah Jazz. Who have been really not impressive to start this year, to say the least. But the Nuggets, they're looking like a really dangerous team, really deep.
Yeah, no, definitely. Denver's been super impressive. You know, it's funny, is their 12th in offensive rating, you know, one of the top offensive teams the last 2 years. They're third in defensive rating. Last year, I think they were bottom 10. You know, the critique going to the season, did this team get better defensively? You know, they definitely bought in, and Jokic is definitely improved in that area as well. Talking about him, Gary Harris Jr. has been impressive, looking like a 20-point-per-game scorer. You know, Jamal Murray, I believe, has had a couple injuries to deal with, but it's been an amazing start for Denver, and Will Barton's been out. You know, they'll get him back, I think, in about a month and change. So having guys like this and constantly improving and building that confidence early in the year and playing great defense, Denver's a team that really has a chance. I know I predicted them top four. I mean, they almost look like they could be a lock to get a top four seed. Obviously, a lock can change in the West, but I've been super impressed, you know, what I've seen from them so far.
Yeah, like you mentioned, the defense is what – I mean, on the preview show, we knew the offense was going to be big time. I think I said this team could score like 130 points per game, but they might give up 125. And the fact of the matter is, like you mentioned, their defense has been what's winning them games so far. Obviously, they're missing Will Barton. I know Jamal Murray is only shooting like 27% from three. You know, their offense is a little sluggish. With Barton coming back in time, that'll help. But as long as the defense keeps up, yeah, this is a home court team out West, and maybe even better than that, you know, a higher up home court team.
Yeah, it looks like two or three could be within range, you know, with the way some of the other teams are playing, and obviously getting a good head start early in the season really helps. And with Barton being out, they've been playing some other guys to win, getting some good experience over there too. Who else in the West is impressed? Like you mentioned, the Jazz haven't been great. Houston's struggling. It looks like they're starting to bounce back. But who else in the West has been, you know, impressive in your eyes?
I mean, I'm always impressed with San Antonio. You know, they got rid of Kawhi. They brought in DeMar DeRozan, and they just look the same. They're just a team that's so well coached. Aldridge last night bullied Anthony Davis around, which was surprising to say the least. The Grizzlies, maybe they do win 50 games. Maybe. I mean, they've been solid. Chandler Parsons isn't hurt yet, and he's actually playing decent basketball. You know, the Kyle Anderson contract was really bad, but they've been a nice surprise. And then, I mean, the Kings, right? We should probably give love to the Kings because somehow they're 6-3 and they actually look like a team that wants to win or compete. I don't think they don't have the draft pick. So they're playing for nothing when it comes to the draft. So why not go out there and play hard? You know, De'Aaron Fox had a triple double the other night. Buddy Hield has looked extremely improved, more confident in his jump shot. The assortment of bigs they have doesn't look terrible because Willie Cauley-Stein took a jump. I like Harry Giles and the role he's in. They've been really surprising.
Yeah, we slightly shouted them out last week. And, you know, like you said, they're continuing to play well. Something to keep an eye on because it's not something most people expected going into the year. Any other thoughts on anybody in the East or the West? The Wizards still suck.
No, just that Melo had a nice appearance for two games. That's probably all I got from another Houston team.
He should really thank his hometown Brooklyn Nets because they made it really easy for him to step up. But that's for a Brooklyn Buzz episode. We're going to play a quick round of Guess Who, Corey. I'm going to ask you a question about, you know, a statistic in the NBA so far this season. You're going to have to try to guess the player.
Okay. Here we go.
This is going to be tough. Most rebounds in a game this season.
Do I have to give the number or the player?
The player.
Do I have any hints?
He plays in the East.
Wait a minute.
He plays in the East.
Plays in the East. Antetokounmpo.
Nope. Hassan Whiteside, 24 rebounds in a game.
Do you have who it was against?
I do not have who it was against. I have number two is Andre Drummond at 23 and Andre Drummond at number 22. And I know at least one of those games came against the Nets. Hassan Whiteside, I'm not sure. Most assists in a game this season. You said his name once today.
Well, that I said a lot of names today. most Rondo.
Jokic. 16.
Oh, damn, that was easy.
Most steals in a game. This is going to be a tough one. We just recently talked about a player on that team. He plays in the Western Conference. They had a nice playoff run last year.
Drew Holiday?
PJ Tucker. 7 steals.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Jimmy Butler, number two at six. Rudy Gay with six as well. Most blocks in a game. This is going to be really tough. I'll even give you a hint. He's in the Southeast Division. A player who hasn't necessarily been great the last few years. It looks like a new head coach has kind of helped him find a new role in the team. I was about to say his name, but I didn't slip.
Biombo?
Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Seven blocks.
Damn, I knew it had to be a Hornet.
Yeah, so James Borrego's done a good job of unlocking him. I can ask you most points in a game. I think you should be able to get this one.
It's got to be Klay Thompson, right? 52?
Yes, sir. All right. And most threes is obviously Klay Thompson. So that about wraps it up. Any other things you want to throw out there, Corey?
No, that I got to look at stats more. That was rough. I was one for what, seven? One for eight? Yeesh.
They're very hard, especially early in the year. I got one more. Who averages the most touches per game in the NBA?
Most touches?
He plays in your division, the Pacers division.
Oh, Zach LaVine.
Nope. Blake Griffin.
Really?
Yeah, Blake Griffin at 91.
He did have another big game yesterday.
91.3 touches. He's essentially playing point guard. Nikola Jokic at number two and Marc Gasol at number three. So some really interesting stats, obviously, early in the season. These will change. We'll definitely play some more Guess Who throughout the year. But as always, Corey, pleasure talking hoops. As always, thank you, everybody, for listening. Check us out, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
Peace out, knuckleheads.